Welcome to Cypher Stories, giving a voice to the homeless. The number of homeless people in Britain continues to rise, and in the first quarter of 2018, reached 320,000. That's one in every 200 people. The last Rough Sleep account revealed that on average, 91 people sleep on the streets of Birmingham every single night. In Cypher Stories, Giving a Voice to the Homeless, we meet some of the people living with homelessness and using the charity Cypher Fireside to help them navigate through this extremely difficult time. This episode is all about women and homelessness, discovering the unique issues they face and how and why they might find a route to a more fulfilling life. I start at Helen Dixon House, a homeless hostel in Moseley for women, which can house up to 42 residents. Ray Lee, a team leader there, explains how they operate.
The way Helen Dixon works is we've got a direct access setup where somebody can refer into us through an agency or they can self-refer. We try and work with them, signpost them on to other agencies such as CGL, who help with drug support, or there's SAFE, who help with sex working. There's AnnaWim, which is a women's charity we can signpost people on. In that direct access time, they're here for 3 months. If they're starting to engage and they're doing well, engaging with the different agencies, then we can look at providing step-down accommodation, which means that they'll be living with us for another 6 months. And during that time, we can get their housing application sorted. We can get their move on programme sorted so they've got the life skills and the potential to go out and have a successful tenancy. Not in all cases does that happen. Some people abandon, some people are not ready to engage.
Samantha is currently living at Helen Dixon House, and I wanted to know what led to her being homeless.
It was a relationship breakup and lost the house, so I ended up going to stay with my son. The relationship there broke down as well, and I had to leave and I had nowhere to go, so I ended up here.
What was that moment like where you realised that you had run out of options?
Terrible. It was heart-wrenching. I didn't know what it was going to be like because I've never been homeless before. I come from a good background. I normally work, and I find all those things I used to do before, I can't do them anymore. It's really hard. I've been in nearly a year now, and I'm going to view a house in a minute. But last night, I actually went round to take a look before the viewing, and I realised it's not going to be suitable because I'm actually older than I look. I'm 55, and
You look about 35, by the way.
Thank you, but this is the problem, and I have sciatica, you know, so I don't think they're taking my conditions into consideration when they're offering me these flats. Even though I'm bidding on them, they don't describe them properly. You don't get to have a good picture until you go around. And I'm afraid there's no security. I don't feel safe. I feel like I'd be more isolated if I was to take this offer. And this is my final offer.
What's it like day to day? You say you've been here a year. I mean, what is this like?
When I first came here, I experienced for the first time that I had to share my facilities with someone that I didn't know, and that wasn't nice at all. There's girls from different backgrounds here for different reasons, and they moved me somewhere where I could be by myself, and that's been all right, but I just keep myself to myself.
And if you get into a flat, how are you going to make sure you kind of maintain a life of, you know, not becoming homeless again? How are you going to maintain that?
I will never end up homeless. How I will prevent it is keeping control of my life and not letting others take control. Because that's where you end up in problems, where you think people are helping you and they're not. And when they say go, you have to go and you've got nowhere to go. You're out on the streets.
And apart from your son, what sort of family support do you have?
None. My mother's in a home at the moment, dementia. My brothers don't want to know me, and
Well, I hope something right and good comes
Thank
up for you.
Yes.
The very best of luck.
So I'm going to go and reason with them now, see if I get another chance.
Fingers crossed.
Thank you very much, Rachel.
I asked Ray Lee what she thought was holding a lot of these women back from independent living.
The amount of stock that the housing providers have got has reduced drastically. Also, the length of time an application can be done, and it can take 6 to 8 weeks before somebody gets their bidding details. And because there's such a demand for housing need, when you start bidding, you can be like 130, 140 on the list, and you've got to get down to like the top three.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's daunting. So when they do get to the top three and they get to go and see a property and they turn it down.
Yeah.
You know, that is that frustrating for you?
I think they're allowed two properties that they can actually, they're offered. If they refuse both of those, then their bidding is suspended for 12 months. I mean, the properties out there aren't great. Some are brilliant, but it just depends on what you want.
How many of the women who are currently living here would be working?
Usually, because of the headache that we get with housing benefit, because of the cost it is to live here, it's like roughly about £200 a week. 95% of that is met by housing benefit. I think we get one or two.
So if they work, it actually would probably mean they couldn't afford to
stay here. Unless they were like they were working like loads of hours, or they'd got a good job.
So it's in some ways it's a slight sort of catch 22. Because they've got this great accommodation and they're safe and they're looked after. There's not much of an incentive, or almost impossible for them to go and start work if that affects their housing benefits. It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hi, my name's Tiffany.
So we're in Helen Dixon House right now. How long have you been staying here?
I've been in and out of here for the past year. I'm a recovering addict.
What was the climax that first led you here?
Domestic violence and homelessness.
And were you sleeping rough at any point?
I had briefly, yeah.
And what was that like?
Not good, like dangerous and lonely. And for a woman to be on the streets, I come from prostitution and stuff, it's kind of very dangerous.
Talk to me about the first point at which, you know, either the addiction or the domestic violence or whatever, you know, pushed you out of what I suppose we would call normal living.
I was using drugs from a young, like, from 17 to 18, so I've been an addict for a long time. But when I met my ex-partner, who obviously was arrested for domestic violence, when I moved to London, when I was there for 7 years, he was quite controlling, and he was on drugs, and he was a drug dealer, and that's where my drug-taking kind of spiraled out of control. That's where it kind of went from part into basically being a full blank addict. That's when the prostitution, escorting and stuff came into it, because he would basically pimp me out to pay for his habit, you know, because he used to inject heroin and stuff. So that's where it became not normal. And I think I did it just mentally, just to cope.
And how long were you doing the sex work? I don't even like to call it work, because it doesn't sound like it was something you were getting any benefit out of.
No, I solely did that kind of work to pay for my habit. Would I do it now? No. I probably did sex work for about 6, probably 8 years, long time.
Wow.
Yeah, started when I was quite young.
And you say in the last year you've been in and out of Helen Dixon House.
Yeah.
What led you in and out each time?
Relapses, really. I was in rehab, I came out, I relapsed. I was in dry houses and recovery houses. And Helen Dixon's always been the place where I was able to come back, and it's kind of, this is my starting block where I can pick myself up. I'm starting college in September to finish my makeup and hair qualification, and it's safe. I feel safe here.
And what, ideally, is the next step?
The next step is, obviously, I'm bidding for a property. They help you bid for a property. You go to college. At the moment, I'm addressing mental health issues, like anxiety, PTSD. I can't say the name of it, but I'm in a fellowship for addicts. So just work on myself and kind of start figuring stuff out.
And how is your relationship with your family?
It's a lot better now. I'm like so fortunate, and it's been like a work in progress, a lot of effort, a lot of making amends. I think they're really pleased that I'm sober now, and I'm working to go into college, I'm bidding for my own property, I want my own home, and I'm ambitious, and I've got purpose again. you know.
Excellent. Well, you're 27, you've got the world at your feet.
I know, it's amazing.
And yeah, it is great. And so you're doing the hair and makeup course, yeah. And ultimately, what do you want to do with that?
I want to become self-employed. And I would like to help, homeless people in the future. Obviously, do think around helping them with grooming and help them set up a place where they can come and have a shower and eat and do their hair for them, give them a haircut, especially women on the street. So I'd love to help women, help them look after themselves, you know.
Next, I head to Cypher Fireside, where female clients are very much in the minority. Jackie, who runs their weekly women's group, explains why the drop-in is often so male-dominated.
There's many reasons for that, and women generally do get rehoused a lot quicker than men. However, we do have quite a small but significant group of women that come into the centre, so we want to create sort of a safe space for the women to come in without the men, really.
Why are women's needs different? What do women need that are different from men?
Well, in terms of homelessness, everyone who's homeless is usually very vulnerable, but for a female who's homeless, she's extra vulnerable, especially if they're out there on the street rough sleeping alone. They're open to all kinds of horrors, really, and we want to make sure that everyone's kept as safe as possible. So we've created this space here, which we have once a week for the women to come in to talk about any issues that affect them personally, which they don't particularly want to speak about in front of the men. So that's why.
So you're setting out paints and sort of crafting here, which looks exciting. Why the sort of dual activity? Do the women find it easier to talk when they're doing something else?
It's more of it's kind of like a distraction technique almost, but. The women love doing arts and crafts, and we do all sorts of different things every week. It brings women together. It's a focus for us during the course of the morning, but it also creates a space where everyone feels a lot more relaxed if they're doing kind of artwork and crafts. And they feel more open to talk about other issues that are going on, which is not to say that it's a sad group. It's not. We have lots of fun as well, but it just creates that space. And then the women get to know me a little bit better as well, so they can talk to me outside of the group as well, because they know me better through doing the artwork and the crafts.
And apart from the safety aspect, what particular problems do you think women face when they are homeless and rough sleeping in particular?
Well, for some women... A lot of the women, in fact, actually do have children who might be in care, and then it's very difficult for them then to see their children at any point. There's other obvious issues around sort of keeping clean.
Let's talk about periods.
Yeah, periods.
Jackie,
that's where we go.
No, it's important. Yeah. I mean, it's horrible enough when you go to work and you realise you haven't bought enough tampons with you or whatever, and you have to ask a mate. Well, I can't fathom the idea that you don't have access to...
Well, yeah, you have no access to running water for a start. So, it's very difficult to keep yourself clean. You may have no money to go and actually buy sanitary protection. So that's, again, another obstacle for women. We can provide tampons and sanitary towels here, and we're very lucky to have them donated to us. So we can do that, but for women who don't access Cypher, they're actually stuck, really, and it must be really difficult for them, and sometimes you just don't know, you never know when you're going to start your period.
No.
It could be in the middle of the night while you're outside on the pavement, which is horrendous,
And you mentioned women and children. This is something that, in my time making this podcast, has interested me. A lot of the men I speak to don't necessarily mention whether or not they have children, and I might find out that they do have children, but being separated from their children or not being able to parent their children isn't always their biggest trauma or their biggest shame. But for the women, that burden seems to fall much heavier on them. It seems to be like, oh no, it's a homeless woman and she can't look after her children. No one seems to raise that same issue for men.
No, it's definitely more, I think the burden is quite a good word to use there, actually. Most of the women that come into the women's group have children, and we often talk about them. Some of them do have access to their children and they are allowed to see them every so often, but even the women who don't see their children, they often make things for them in the hope that they will see them at some point, or they'll write poems and little stories and that for their children. So this is a place where they can actually do that as well and feel that it's okay to do that, and no one's judging them on that here. So you know, I think the shame does fall on women quite heavily in that respect. And, you know, we don't necessarily know which one of the men have got children because they don't necessarily talk about them that much with us. The women tend to.
It's heartbreaking to hear that.
Yeah.
The first woman to arrive at the group is Kathy, who I met last year. She seems in a much better place than she did then, and I wanted to know why.
Because I'm moving out of a place that was really bad. I was in there 6 months. I was left there with no heat and lighting for 2 weeks. In the freezing cold, I could see my breath in the air in the rooms. And I don't know how I got through, but I got a faith and I got through. And I've lived in some places, but it was very isolated. And to be honest, I'm just glad I'm moving.
And you look very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed today. A little bit of glittery makeup on.
It's my son's birthday. I love my family. I'm very blessed. I'm in Cypher now. This place has helped me 100%. Without Cypher, I just don't know what I'd do.
And so you're going to make something today in women's group?
Absolutely.
You're going to make something for your son?
That's an idea.
There you go.
Because I'm going home for Mother's Day soon.
There you go, taking something. Lovely. Thanks for chatting to me, Kathy.
That's all right, you're quite welcome.
As women start to arrive, it dawns on me that I might be a mildly unwelcome presence in their safe space.
I make a podcast for Cypher Fireside.
I don't want to talk.
You don't want to talk? No, neither do you want to talk.
No.
Oh,
sorry.
Really?
Yes, yeah, sorry.
That's a shame. That's okay, you don't have to be sorry. No.
Sorry.
It's difficult because women don't very often want to talk about their stories.
I turn off my recorder and sit and paint with them. Two women who had agreed to talk to me have changed their minds, and I don't blame them. After a while, everyone agrees that I can start recording again, so Kathy can read me a poem she wrote for her son when he went to prison.
It was called Love Is Letting Go. Treasured moments that we share, stirred emotions awoken, so many words left unspoken, just to show we care. Hearts that are entwined, memories that bind our very souls together, we will love each other forever. Miles apart, you are always in my heart. True love never dies. And that is why my tender heart cries, I miss you. I cannot change the past, but our love will always last the test of time. Love conquers all. I miss your smile, your boyish way. You are my child.
It's okay.
This very day, please take care, my wonderful son. I think of you till the day is done. My reason for living, I'll never stop giving my love to you, my precious son, Dan.
That's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Oh, give me a hug.
Sorry. Whenever I read that, I can't help that. Sorry.
It's okay, that's fine.
What I couldn't hug my son, but I could write what I felt.
When your son went to prison,
yeah.
How did that make you feel as a mother?
I felt I let him down. I felt terrible. I thought it's all my fault, but I realised in the end it really wasn't. And I got through. My writing saved everything.
Do you think as mothers we take more of that responsibility for how our children turn out than fathers do?
Yes, because my second husband left me as a single parent, and the responsibility was totally on me. I tried to bring them up as best I could, but I had a nervous breakdown and they were taken into care. My daughter when she was 14, my son when he was 11 was taken into a secure unit because he was out of control. My other son at 12, my other daughter at 8 were taken away in one day. I thought I was going to die. I did everything I could to get them back. They are back now. That was a long time ago. But I felt absolutely helpless, and as a mother, I thought, awful. But all through it, I knew I loved them, and they loved me, and eventually they were given back to me. But they were in care a long, long time.
And what about their fathers?
Well, I have 3 from one, and he's not in this country, and the 4th one walked away as well, and I was left with the total responsibility of it all. And I had a breakdown and I hit alcohol and it nearly took my life, took my everything, my children, my home, my self-esteem and my will to live.
And how's your relationship with your kids now?
It is great. It's great. They love me through it all. And my daughter's a diamond. I'm going down for Mother's Day. She's great. We have our set twos, Jackie.
Yeah.
But you know, I say to her last night, I love you. And that's all you need to know. Through it all. She said, Mum, I love you too. And my sons, they love me. And you know what? I am so proud that they love me, because a lot of mothers lose that love from their children due to them being put in care. But mine is still there.
One of the things that's striking me as different with the women is a recognition of their emotional needs and their vulnerabilities beyond just needing to be housed, and a real desire to build a new life holistically, which means seizing the support where possible and using every drop of it to propel them forward. One woman who has done just that is Sarah, who I first met 4 months ago. And since then, she has had a remarkable transformation.
I'm fine, thank you. Very, very well indeed. Yes.
You really look it. It's shining out of your face.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that, yeah.
So, tell me about your journey with homelessness.
Right, so I have had 3 domestic violent relationships. And I've had to leave 3 domestically violent relationships and go into refuge. I would class that as being homeless, because I haven't got a roof over my head. And at times it was really, really bad, because I've been in places where I couldn't lock my door. I didn't feel that my son was safe. There wasn't anything to eat. One particular place I went into, because I hadn't had my benefits on that day, I had to wait nearly 3 days to get any food. So I just went wandering around, left my son at my mum's. My family didn't know anything about it, because I didn't want to tell them about the violence. So I slept rough a couple of times, because I didn't want to go back to the refuge. I started drinking heavily, very heavily, and sort of spiralled out of control, really, and managed to get housed. Nearly lost my little boy, and I had to sort myself out. So I went to Aquarius and I did some work with them. I went to a few AA meetings. I sorted myself out. That was in Wolverhampton, where I was living. Then my parents got ill, they're elderly, so I moved to Birmingham. And again, I felt really isolated, really alone. The accommodation I was in wasn't good. It was private, and it was unsatisfactory. No heating, we were cold all the time. So a friend of mine brought me to Cypher, and he said, it's a really good place, I'll help you out with your housing. I had debt at the time. And I came in here, that was about a year and a half ago. They helped me with my debt, they helped me with my housing issues. It became like a family to me. I started coming more often. I went to a women's group. My confidence really grew, because people were saying to me, you can do this, you can do things, and I was thinking, I can't, and they were saying, you're supporting people, you can talk to people. In my previous life, I worked in nurseries as a nursery nurse, but I've also worked with people quite extensively, but my confidence had just gone because of my drink and being in recovery and being homeless and everything else that goes with it. So one of the support workers here referred me to a project called Every Step of the Way, which is Birmingham Mind. So I went along there. I started a little group going here, a little band going called The Bubble. That increased my confidence. We had guys coming in singing. I could see them increasing in confidence. We did a few gigs. We went out and did concerts. We joined up with a choir with no name. We did some work in an elderly people's home. It was fantastic. Went on to Every Step of the Way, and they gave me even more confidence, because they actually said to me, well, what do you want to do? And because of Cypher and my experiences, I wanted to support other people who'd been in my position, and I wanted paid work. I needed to get paid work, because my son was coming up to go into university. And I was thinking, I can't go on like this, living on benefits and not really doing anything. So they sent me out to a lot of opportunities. I worked alongside Birmingham City Council on their citizenship scheme, and they valued the input of my lived experience. I talked about being homeless, being an alcoholic, the services I've received and not received. I've been to down to the Cabinet Office and I've spoken to people in the Cabinet Office about, you know, my situation and what we face as homeless people in addiction, mental health. And from that, I got a job and I'm now working at Birmingham Voice Services Council on InReach Outreach. So we're supporting guys who are homeless and we're looking at accommodation that's not regulated. So rather than going in and saying to landlords, you know, this isn't good, we're trying to make things better. So it's about training, supporting the support workers to support the guys that are in the hostels, because that's what it's about. People need support, and Cypher Fireside is that first place to come to get that support.
It's an incredible journey, Sarah, and it's so great to hear such a good news story. I'm also really aware, listening to your story, that at any step of the way, that could have fallen by the wayside.
Definitely.
That the support you were getting and the help you were getting was vital to this all working out. What do you think is different for women? I mean, one thing I'm hearing is domestic violence. Yes. Domestic violence and addiction, all the women I speak to, one or both of those things.
Yeah.
What do you think... It's a big question for you, Sarah.
Yeah, it's okay.
What do you think could be changed or improved or helped at a much earlier stage in a woman's experience of that to stop them getting to the point where they're in a refuge and they're homeless and they turn to alcohol and they don't have work and the children may be taken away? Such a familiar story I'm hearing. Do you think there is, you know, anything that could be done or changed? I mean, apart from men stop being violent to women.
Yeah, I think that, again, projects like Cypher Fireside, Experts by Experience at Birmingham Mind, The Choir with No Name, getting women's voice out there, because the perception of homelessness is men. And so there are services for women, like they have a fantastic women's group here, but a lot of it is just tagged on. So it's about giving homeless women a voice, having places where they can meet. I mean, on our particular project, we're looking specifically at how we're going to support women who are rough sleepers, women who are sofa surfing, hidden homeless, and we're looking at maybe setting up a group called Time of the Month, which sounds daft, but it's about initially providing sanitary products for
women. It's not daft, Sarah. It's not daft. It's something that no one talks about.
I talked to a lady and she said that she's using a cloth and she's having to wash it out. And I mean, there are projects, there's wonderful projects out there that do provide sanitary wear, but it's getting to people. So what we're actually looking at is setting up a group, and from that group, maybe then we can do other things, you know, supporting other ways, getting them other services that they need, refer them into No Wrong Door, which is a network of services all working together. And so that they don't have to keep going from service to service. They would tell their story once. We've got that on computer so that we can then refer to these guys, and that lady, that woman has not got to come in here and go through the whole painful, like I've just done with you, episode again. In particular, women get a very raw deal on the street. You know, they're subject to domestic violence, sex trafficking. I know women who, you know, have to give themselves just to get somewhere to sleep at night. They're very vulnerable on the streets.
Well, I'm going to let you go to work because I don't want you to be late for work with your job. Honestly, because we met before Christmas and I know you were on the brink of starting this job, but I don't think you probably even realised what a difference it was going to make to your life. And I can just see, you're a changed woman.
My esteem is really high, and it's really funny that you said that because lots of people have said to me, in fact, somebody said to me the other day, "You're not pregnant, are you?" I went, "No, I'm starting a new job," because they say, "Oh, you've got this glow about you." So yeah, it certainly has made a difference to me, and if I can do that for other women, you know, everybody has got something to offer and something to give. Get them volunteering, get them out there, get the voices heard.
Once again, thank you to everyone who shared their stories with me and made this episode possible. The next episode of Cypher Stories, Giving a Voice to the Homeless, will be all about addiction and the role it plays in the homelessness crisis. Thank you for listening.